to Night City Blues. I am your game master, Lexi Willits. Not to be confused with Alexei Kravchenko, the medtech. I realized after having changed my name, no relation to this character in our game, that naming convention might become confusing. So I also go by Alexandria for long. But yeah, Lexi Willits, your game master, and the voice of God in Night City here. Turning it over to Finley and Zay here for our intro question this week. Fitz is doing some cursory, basically Google searching to see what he can find out about you guys on the Night City data pool. What does his search result turn up on both of you?
So, my name is Finley Stevens. I play the character of Alexei Kravchenko in this lovely, lovely podcast. And if Fitz were to do a cursory Google search, because he's a nosy little rat boy and wants to know who I am, I don't think he'd find a whole bunch other than just, like, you know, maybe a website for the clinic. But other than that, Alexei doesn't have any prior history to Night City before they showed up, so there would not be anything that Fitz would be able to find here.
And also, for context in the world here, after the data crash 25 years ago, the global internet has become practically unusable for, at least for human netrunners. So the local data pools that have replaced it have essentially been localized LAN networks. And so the only way to access the records in Night City is to log into a computer physically in Night City. So the FBI in Washington don't know jack shit about what's on the NCPD, like, criminal records, unless they physically come to Night City and check themselves. So in this modern world, or in this, you know, dark future world, it's pretty easy to hide from your past. You just have to physically go somewhere where nobody knows you, and no one from your old life can look you up. And so, for example, no one in Fiji or Vladivostok is going to have any idea, even if you are fully just using your given name around the street, unless they come to Night City and check.
Hence, I am Ghost.
Hence, you are Ghost, even if you are still sort of using your own name.
It's fine.
And for a little more high profile, Zay, tell us, what would someone find out about Pux Jumong?
Probably the social security number. No.
His credit card number, the expiration date, the three numbers on
yeah,
the back.
You know.
Identification number. Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of information out about Jumong. Although, it's all kind of stuff pre-established, right? Jumong blew up a place, is a public menace, is this, etc., etc., etc.
A lot of inflammatory.
I feel like all of that is well-trodden territory with what people know about Jumong. I feel like Fitz probably got into some of the weird shit. Some of the stuff that people generally wouldn't know. And that's still not a lot, because Jumong keeps his private life very private. But there is one thing, one little factoid that I'll bring up, that people have tried to find the clothing that Jumong wears, and it's a very hard thing to do, considering that none of it is generic brand, none of it is designer, there is no branding on any of it. Hmm. People don't know where his, like, eclectic clothing and style comes from.
Interesting.
And so it's something that's been theorized, it's something that, like, people have tried to find, like, who's been designing all of these clothes, and no one's been able to figure that out, and to the behest, to the sadness of anyone in the scene who's trying to, like, kind of be in on the fashion, it's just nowhere.
How many people do you think have cried because of this?
Oh, God, two?
You're leaving a trail of broken hearts?
Yeah, those two broken hearts who just really want... The other thing, though, connected with that, is that people can't buy it, but people do end up with the clothes sometimes. And, like, that's also a little bit of a mystery.
How the hell?
Because just in the crowd, people will sometimes find his jacket.
Interesting. I mean, you also, like, for example, chucked your jacket out of a moving car that one time, so, like...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a mysterious dumpster fire of a person.
Me.
That's our boy. Well, we start back at the top of the episode here as Michiko's private yacht, the Shokan, arrives back in the Upper Marina Yacht Club, and you all disembark. Sekhmet follows the two of you off the boat, and as you're getting back to the parking lot where you see the Fux Machine, Fux Mobile, I think Fux Machine, right? I want to get this right, because I've gotten it wrong so many times. Fux Mobile?
Good. I think it's the Fux Mobile, and if I'm wrong, well, fuck it. Fux it.
We've been on the record, I think, going back and forth on it a couple of times. It's the van. the big party van.
Yeah.
Is parked in the... It probably stands out like a sore thumb among all of the sports cars and luxury ground cars and aerodynes and limousines of this very fancy yacht club.
Absolutely.
Very flashy, very neon bright. And Sekhmet pulls you both aside as you depart from the boat and says, "All right, boys, we're compartmentalizing the op. If you guys need anything from Danger Girl, you go through me. That clear?"
"Yes, bestie."
Sure.
"You need reinforcements, you need a rescue, you need your ass wiped and can't find the toilet paper, you call me." "You're going after the Tiger Claws. They're Oyabun Hayato Matsuda. He's a legendary gangster and martial artist, but since Data Crash wiped all the digital records, man's been a ghost. No citizen identification number, no residence on record, no police files with his name, and those who betray his trust have a tendency to be ground into red paste dragging behind a motorbike on the expressway. So, we don't know all that much about him. We know the Claws run most of the casinos, dojos, and brothels in Watson and Westbrook, so I'd start asking around town. Alexi, you still able to get a hold of those feral tomcats that got away?"
"Yes, I still have their contact information."
"All right." And she, again, kind of rolls her eyes at that, having previously chastised you for not telling her that sooner, and says, "You know what's going to happen to them eventually, right? We're still on the same page that those boys are, they are in for it."
We have come to the agreement that they deserve what is coming.
But also, their leads. And I'm not going to jeopardize this mission for a vendetta, let's call it. So, for the time being, yeah, follow those leads, and I will try and stay out of their way, just because there's a chance they might recognize me, and that could go pretty bad for us. But in the meantime, track down those leads, report back into me if you hear anything, and let me know if you need anything. Okay, boys?"
"Aye, aye, Captain."
All right,
I'm taking off. And she heads back to Michiko. What do y'all want to do? How do you want to proceed with this investigation?
I feel like first and foremost, we should probably get cleaned up. I'm sure we still look like a mess.
I mean, a mess is standard for me, but...
How are we all doing for damage? I know Jumong at least took a couple good hits, and you have that jagged cut across your cheekbone that's still probably bleeding at this point.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
I thought I patched that up.
He's doing mostly fine with HP, but a couple of days rest is probably good for him.
Alexi's fine. Alexi could go right now.
Also, if we want to skip ahead by an afternoon, we don't have Crow on the recording with us. but I'm just gonna like cautiously assume that since Marsh's cyber arm got blown the hell up by a grenade, he's probably gonna need
he needs a hand.
We can assume that Alexei probably goes off to the clinic and fixes Marsh's hand first, and then comes back this afternoon.
That's a safe bet.
But, Jumong, what are you doing first and foremost here?
Well, I mean, unless anyone wants to chat it up with him for now, Jumong's just gonna hop into his van, nearly go home, remember that he doesn't have the contact information for anyone here, and is going to try and make a mad scramble to at least get Alexei's phone number. Or I guess agent number. Oh, that's a very good point.
We sure never exchanged contact information with anybody.
Okay, actually, you know what? Hold on. You drive halfway home and then realize you don't have anyone's agent number. Like, in this whole...
Only have Michiko's.
You only have Michiko's. That's true.
Yeah. Not even Sekhmet, the person I'm supposed to go through.
As you're driving across town, how do you get back in contact with Alexei, who you don't know where the fuck they are?
I think I'm, like, stuck in highway traffic and just start screaming, fuck, and pull off the side of the road and try to find Alexei's clinic.
You check through the city data net, and you find that there is a Kravchenko clinic along the shoreline in Watson.
Mm-hmm.
Not terribly far from the Ticonderoga mega tower that you grew up in. I think it's probably like 2 or 3 blocks away, just off of Edison.
Sure.
And as you arrive, you see Alexei sending Marsh on their way, conveniently precluding us from needing Crow on this phone call. And yeah, play out the scene. What do y'all do?
I think that exhausted from navigating the city, just like stumbles out of the van and just like slumped over, basically dragging himself to the front door, just phone number.
Alexei kind of looks at him confused, because Alexei's like, I thought you went somewhere, why are you here right now? And just like,
phone number, we forgot to give each other our phone numbers.
Ah, yes, that is an important detail, yes. And then Alexei, I don't know, swipes the information over. I don't know how this shit works.
Yeah, you flick your finger and it magically goes over to his phone.
Science.
Same way that people like pay you by just like flicking stuff. It's sci-fi, don't you worry about it.
It's just a more
for context, I believe Alexei, you do have Sekhmet's number, I believe, right? From that time she broke into your apartment?
Yeah, when she broke into my apartment, and then she was like, okay.
Uh-huh.
Buy me dinner first and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as Jumong gets it, just thumbs up, awkward smile, thanks, and rushes back to his car, driving away, saying, all right, I'm gonna go to sleep for like 2 days.
Ryan asks, who the fuck was that?
Alexei kind of just chuckles, just like, I guess you could call him a business associate.
Man, like, beat the hell up. Did he like need medical attention? Like, we're a clinic. We could have like, I don't know. Is he okay? That was a hell of a head wound.
He just needs to take it easy for a few days. It looked like it had been taken care of already.
Alright. And he goes back to sipping on his latte.
Alexei walks into the clinic, asks Ryan, so did anything interesting happen while I was gone?
The Queens had a hell of a show at the Fuck, Marry, Kill, so they missed that, but other than that, it was fine.
And then Alexi kind of just, like, gives a nod. It's just like, well, if you need me, I will be in my office, probably asleep.
All right, take care, boss. Can I get you anything? You look a little worse for the wear yourself.
Alexi kind of brushes some of the, like, loose hairs from their ponytail, just kind of, like, back, and just like, I suppose I could use something to eat if there's anything nearby. If not, do not worry about it, but it would be nice.
I could run down for euros just across the street. What are you feeling?
That is fine by me.
All right, sure thing. And he heads off and comes back with a couple of like foil wraps full of hot steaming euros and falafel. He is like already
ooh,
deep
boy.
Into his own
elbow deep in that falafel. Yep. See.
Yes. Uh huh.
Everybody disliked that.
And I cannot imagine that's the last time we're going to hear some derivation of that joke from your mouth, but I think with that, we'll cut over to Jumong. As you're driving away, what's your plan here? Do you, like, genuinely just conk out for the weekend? It's Sunday morning at this point, or Sunday afternoon. What are you doing as you head home? Where are you going to spend this time?
Well, I think that he's definitely going to take that Sunday to just relax nice and easy. He's got a couple of projects that he's working on for the morning of the next day that I don't think I'm going to get too much into, just because I think it'd be a fun surprise for people to learn. But I think that he's going to call up Alexi probably middle of the day on Monday.
All right. Before that, I think Sunday afternoon, as you're taking it easy at home, you get a phone call.
Oh,
caller
boy.
ID reads Fuck Swan In. What do you do?
I let it ring almost to the end of when it would just like go to voicemail.
Mm-hmm.
But last minute, I answer it.
Oh, come on, Yen. Jumba, you safe? You okay? You got me scared there.
Oh, yeah. I'm hanging on. How are, what's up?
Listen, we gotta talk, but, not over an unsecured line. What are you doing right now?
Looks out to just, like, the rest of the room and, like, messy, basically, like, kind of workshop stuff going on all around him and just nothing. You want to meet somewhere?
Yeah. In person would be good. Just come alone. Let me think. How about 23rd floor Skyway between Ticonderoga and ANF? You know, the one with the churro stand across from the Sit and Spin?
Oh, yeah, sure. I can be there in, like, half an hour?
Yeah, sounds good. You stay safe, Jim.
And he hangs up.
All right.
Okay. You would know Tyco to be the abbreviation for Ticonderoga, the general name for the mega tower that both your mother currently lives in and in which you grew up.
Right.
The mega tower itself is about 150 stories and has a footprint the size of the entire city block that it's on. It has been described as identical copies of the same city block stacked on top of each other 150 times. It's kind of a combination of residential and business areas, and it is directly across the street from the Asukaga and Fitch Tower, which is a corporate office building in Watson, which sprung up during the rebuilding, and is one of the tallest towers in Night City. So sure. You would know the 26th floor skyway is sort of an umbilical walkway between those two towers that goes across the street.
Yeah, I go there and making sure, you know, all of the piercings and stuff are out. All of he's got like his rattiest, biggest, floppiest hoodie on. No makeup, just as like casual and low key as he possibly can.
As you make your way up Sunday evening, the traffic is a little lighter going in and out of Tycho. Each of the four sides of the building on each of the main block corners, there are these like massive entryways into the building itself, like about as wide as maybe two-lane highways. So like they're full streets of people coming in and out of this building. There are tens of thousands of people living in Tycho, and just as many people commuting to and from work at the A&F Tower, which is a lot more dead on the weekends. Not as many people sure. in the office. But as you approach, the imposing brutalist tower looms overhead, and as you walk through, I'm gonna have you roll a perception check.
Sure thing. Arnar. All right. That's going to be a 10.
You see, strolling through, that there are a pair of brightly colored gangsters kind of leaning against the wall right outside the nearest entrance that you're passing through. Having grown up here, this is not an unusual sight. By their colors and motorcycles, you assume them to be Tiger Claws. Certainly not the only street gang that have a presence in Tycho, but definitely one of the biggest.
Yeah, I'm just going to make sure to just kind of steer clear of them.
Make a stealth check.
Sure. That's going to be a 16.
And they get a 13. The two are smoking cigarettes outside by their bikes, and with your baggy hoodie up over your head, they do not even glance at you, and you can slip by undetected.
Awesome.
Inside the building, the crowd disperses around maybe a dozen different elevator shafts and parallel stairwells. The main floor is a lobby kind of designed to funnel, again, tens of thousands of people in and out of this building over the course of the day. And you can either take the stairs all the way up or wait in line for the elevator.
No fucking way I'm waiting in line. I'm taking the stairs.
As you hoof it up, there are almost nobody on the stairs this time of day.
Uh-huh.
And you pass a couple. They look like maybe teenagers making out against one of the walls. You see maybe an 8-year-old with a can of spray paint graffitiing some of the concrete walls on the way up before a singular aerial combat drone deploys out of the wall and extends a gun barrel towards him, at which point he drops the spray paint can and sprints away as the like dragonfly drone chases after him. And other than that, you make it up to the 23rd floor unmolested.
Great.
The umbilicals between Tycho and A&F are these skyway, almost tunnels of duracrete and glass. I think it's like every 5 floors, there's one of these tunnels, one to the next. So for sure. At least the first 100 floors of Tycho, these two buildings are linked together by these umbilical cords. And during the work days, you would know, having grown up here, that there is a tidal flow of residential commuters going from Tycho into A&F, and then that steady flow trickles off until around noon, when it sits at a perfect standstill, and then the tide comes back in as all the commuters come back from work.
Sure.
During rush hour, it is almost impossible to walk against the current through that crowd as thousands of people flow from one to the next. Sunday afternoon, however, the place is pretty much dead. As you walk out into the glass skyway on the 23rd floor, you can see Edison Avenue stretching out below you, and you can see a churro stand with its bored-looking teenage employees half-heartedly hawking their wares. And sitting, like, at the entrance to the skyway, you see the Sit and Spin, which is a brain dance arcade. And I'm going to make you roll another perception check as you step out into the skyway.
Sure thing. That's going to be a critical 21.
Ooh. Okay, in that case, you see that there is a small crowd. There's maybe a dozen people scattered about the skyway, just kind of hanging out. There are a couple of people in long, dark trench coats, smoking cigarettes inside the building. It's definitely a little hazy. And inside the Braindance Arcade, you see a lot of bright, colorful machines, each displaying the name of a different video game. You can see each of the machines has a faded leather high-top stool in front of them, but none of the consoles has any screen or controls. Instead, each game has a dashboard with a single retractable fiber optic wire, and a universal adapter port magnetically slots either into an over-the-eyes brain dance wreath or into a Neuralink port for a more direct immersion experience. And you see about a half dozen customers sitting hunched over the dashboards of these game consoles, their eyes glassy and blank with wires plugged into the back of their heads. The one person in this arcade who is not jacked into one of the games is Fuck Swan In, who is sitting off in a corner on a cracked leather couch with a little coffee table in front of it, very nervously sipping at a flask. What do you do?
I think I'm just gonna walk up and sit down next to them and just... So... What's this about, Vince?
Fuck, Michael. Alright. Sorry, I'm... His hand kind of shakes as he takes another swig and stows his flask away in his own armor jack. And he says, what the fuck have you got yourself wrapped up in? I'm talking about Chikara. I mean...
What do you mean?
You've always had, you know... there's always been stuff going on there, but... What's changed? Is something big happening? Is something going down?
Look, Vince. I don't like lying to you.
Fuck.
Yeah, there's something on the horizon.
Alright, I'll start it from the top. We Ann got back from Reno Saturday afternoon. At the label, there was this corpo woman. Chikara by the looks of her, but she didn't give a name. Just... She was grim. That's how I'd put it. Looked maybe old school Japanese, like almost a full face of geisha makeup. Chrome Pack and Hustle backing her up. They ambushed us as we were coming back from unpacking the tour bus coming home, and they asked us about you, Michael. They wanted to know where you were. They wanted to know your real name. They wanted to know your family. They wanted to know where we could find you. They wanted to know everyone who might know you, and they are coming for you. Now, none of us cracks. we might be working for them, but none of us are fucking narcs. So, none of us gave you up, but they're coming for you in a bad way, Michael.
Fuck.
You gonna be okay?
I hope so. I don't know. Every day I feel like... I'm just digging myself deeper. But you know what? Someday I'm gonna make it to hell. And I look over and this might be the now time that he can clearly see the scar on my face.
Look at that. The man who can always take off his piercings.
Yep.
That looks like the first thing you won't be able to take off.
Yeah. Hard when, scuffing up my moneymaker, right?
You don't want to be too recognizable, do you?
Well, that's what the makeup's for, and at least I've always been good at that, huh?
I can't complain. His face goes grim again. None of us turned on you. None of us gave your name, Michael, but I can't promise that they're not going to come for you. They've always had it out for you, obviously, but there was something different about this girl. Like, everyone in the office, all of the Corpo stooges just cowered. She, like, snapped her finger. Whole room bowed to her. Seems like you've kicked a hornet's nest here, boss.
Hornet or bees? Because hornets, they sting, then they keep on going. But bees, once they sting, you know, they're done for. Which would you chalk them up to be?
Here's hoping bees, I guess.
Here's hoping bees.
And he takes his flask out and kind of offers you a toast and says, I'm going to try and lay low. I'm keeping my nose to the grindstone. I want to pretend this never happened, but I just needed to warn you.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. Say, tell Tanya I'm sorry.
Yeah, we'll do.
And, let me know if you need any new leather jacks.
I am gonna avoid calling you for the foreseeable future.
You know what? That's absolutely, that's fair enough.
You have my number. If you make it through this, whatever this is, whatever's going on, I don't want to know. If you make it through it and you're still in one piece, give me a call. You got my number. Okay.
Well, here's to hoping I'm a wasp then, huh?
Here's hoping. Alexei.
Yes.
You are also going to get a call.
Ay, Dios mío.
Same day, Sunday evening, let's say. You get a call from Sekhmet. How do you answer?
Alexei, you know, gets the call, checks the agent, sees it's Sekhmet, answers, and just says, and to what do I owe the pleasure, bestie?
Hey, bestie. Meet me on top of ANF Tower. We should talk. Just the two of us. Don't bring the other one.
You're not going to propose, are you, bestie?
Shut the fuck up. Nah, I just like... I owe you an explanation. Sound fair?
Alright. I'll see you there.
Alright. Observation deck. ANF. I'll show you where to go from there.
And she hangs up. What are you doing?
Alexei is definitely probably still in their office. Is this, you said Sunday evening?
Yeah.
Alexei picks up their bag, as they always do. Checks all their stuff and then goes out and then says to Ryan and says, I have some things to take care of, so... You know, just hold down the fort as usual.
You have a lot of mysterious goings-on these days. Anything I should be worried about?
There are things going on, yes, but I will let you know when you should be concerned about them.
I suppose I can't argue with that. All right, you just stay safe.
Yes, I will do my best. You do the same as well.
Thanks.
And then Lexi walks out the door and... Where is this? Like, is this walking distance? Do I need a taxi?
I think we said it was like 3 or 4 blocks.
If it's just 3 or 4 blocks, then Lexi can walk. Lexi moseys on. Takes a little strolly stroll, a little walky walk down to A&F, to the observation deck to meet Bestie.
Alright. The Asakaga and Fitch Tower is a massive, monolithic, reflective black glass needle tower with a flat roof with a couple of lightning rods sticking out to the top. It's not the tallest building in Night City, but it's pretty damn near close, like well over 200 stories. The main lobby just has like row after row of elevators and a front desk attendant politely going about their business on a computer behind a bulletproof glass screen. And even on the weekend, you can see it's not busy, but there definitely are a few people coming and going, mostly business execs in very fancy suits and mini skirts. This is definitely a corpo establishment, and most of the floors of this building are offices. How do you want to proceed?
Upon walking in the building, Alexi shudders and feels the bad vibes. But, you know, Alexi kind of just walks in, goes to the elevator. Not, I assume, what floor is the observation? Well, fuck. First, is there a map somewhere so I know where the observation deck is? Like, is there like
a... Oh, totally. There's...
Ledger?
There's a massive holographic building legend which shows every single floor of the building broken down by whose offices are on in what suites, and you can see the observation deck is on floor 213.
Alrighty, and then with that, Alexi goes to the nearest elevator and goes to floor 213.
As the elevator slides open, a handful of suits depart from the elevator, and a small crowd quietly steps inside. Everyone in this elevator is avoiding eye contact and pretending not to notice one another, either staring down at their phones or their eyes glassed over, looking at things in their cyber eyes. And it is deathly silent as the elevator rises a few levels at a time, stopping periodically to open the doors to let out passengers and admit new people going up. And as the elevator rises, the crowd gradually thins out. Fewer people get on, more people get off. And at one point, almost the entire crowd exits on a what appears to be a food court as the smell of halal deli meat wafts through the glass doors. And as you approach the top floor, the crowd thins until it's just you and an old woman. This tiny, frail-looking thing clutching an embroidered purse in her tiny, thin, bony hands. And she discreetly looks you up and down, then utters a quiet of indignation, and kind of sits there in dignified silence, ignoring you.
Did Alexi hear her little humph?
Oh, absolutely. This was the kind of humph that designed to be heard. To, snobbishly be heard by one of the lower classes to know that they are not wanted.
Alexi kind of just like rolls their eyes and scoffs, just ugh, and then stands there, awkwardly waiting to be able to get off this damn elevator.
She gets off a few floors below you.
Oh, thank God.
Exiting out into a law firm, by the looks of it. And eventually the glass door slides open one final time to reveal the observation deck. The entire floor of the 213th is one open space. There are no walls other than the windows, which are all like floor-to-ceiling smart glass, and they line every side of the building. There is a floor of what appears to be polished black mirror on both the floor and ceiling, and it all reflects the same warm tone, oranges and browns, which are reflected in the sunset. The whole floor is maybe 100 meters on either side, and it is, at this point, completely empty. You can see a beautiful horizon of the entire city from this vantage point, and you can't see Sekhmet at the moment. What do you do?
Alexei, you know, walks out and kind of just, like, looks around, you know, in bewilderment. Alexei's never had any reason to go in A&F Tower. Kind of just, like, looks out, you know, takes in the view, takes in the sights, and then kind of just, like, snaps back to reality and shakes their head, just like, oh, yes, right, bestie, and then looks around trying to find Sekhmet.
Make a perception check for me.
Perception. Crit fail 11. I'm gonna get shot in my shit, aren't I?
You don't find Sekhmet.
I'm gonna get shot in my shit. Yeah, 11 is the bare minimum I can get.
You still got an 11 on a crit fail,
in that
though.
Case,
holy.
I think you get distracted. I think it's not that you, like, don't see her as much as you get distracted here. Because as you approach the glass windows, something feels off, like slightly off-putting about the view out the window.
Is it fake?
You can see the entire downtown skyline spread out to the south. You can see the blasted scar of the hot zone walled off by the massive Night Corp barricades, the frenzy of scaffolding and construction cranes and new growth high-rise re-emerging around the quarantine zone. And in every other direction, you see miles and miles of rigid grid lines, glittering streetlights in perfect box rows, interrupted only by the fluid curves of the Del Coronado and the brutalist megastructures of the residential arcologies, each with a footprint of a city block but hundreds of meters tall. And beyond that, the Badlands. As you approach the glass, you see that you're not actually looking through glass. Rather, all of the walls, which you at first mistook for windows, are actually high-resolution OLED screens. It appears to be a live feed, and there must be micro-cameras embedded on the outside of the building wall to provide the closed circuit and project it onto the screens inside. But you imagine the outside of this building must look like just a blank wall. No one can see into the building, only see out of it. And it's as you are noticing the very high-definition pixels on this screen wall that Sekhmet walks up behind you.
Alexei is very, very, like, just, like, very in-depth, you know, examining this OLED screen, because Alexei is bewildered that they were bamboozled by a mere computer screen. And it's, you know, just kind of like trying to find some flaw.
Sekhmet surprises you as she walks up behind you in that case. And you feel a cold hand clamp down around your shoulder. And you see her just smiling over at you. She says, "All right, come here. I got a surprise for you."
Alexei kind of just like gasps and jumps back. It's like, "You been a mat." It means holy shit in Russian.
"Hey, come here, you scaredy cat."
"Between the two of us, you are the cat."
"I hope I don't have to hear that joke till the end of time."
"Only time will tell." And then Alexei, you know, follows the bestie over to this supposed surprise.
She leads you over to a section of the glass, in like the corner of the room, and she takes out an electronic key card and kind of waves it against the screen. And you hear a beep as she presses her hand into this nearly invisible crevice. She seems to know exactly where that one flaw that you were just looking for. She knows exactly where that flaw is because she reaches her hand into this tiny narrow crevice and twists a door handle you would never have known was there until she pointed it out.
"Wow, you're so smart, bestie."
"Maintenance door under the roof. I sold this card ages ago, and they never changed the locks. Nobody really goes up there except to do repairs or wash the windows, I guess. So, should have total privacy." And she winks at you.
I see. We'll lead the way.
All right, she slips into a tiny door which swings inward into the window screen. And through that door is a narrow passageway. And you can see that the, quote, windows of this observation deck were actually at least 10 meters from the actual exterior of the building, because this passageway goes for a while. And the illusion of those windows is completely shattered as you walk through here. And it's this hot steam. You're walking through essentially all of the heating and cooling pipes, and you have to really limbo your way through here to not get burned on the scalding metal of the steam vents. And she leads you through the maintenance hatch up to a dead end with a rusty metal ladder, which goes up another maybe 5 meters and ends with a heavy bulkhead latch, which presumably leads onto the rooftop.
Alexi, following behind Sekhmet, is just like, you know, after being in these tunnels, the illusion, the magic, completely ruins.
Oh, of the observation deck?
Yes, the observation deck.
Yeah, trust me, the skyline is much nicer not filtered through a screen. That's part of what I wanted to show you, actually. And she cranks open the bulkhead door, and the humid steam kind of dissipates as a blast of cold air welcomes you up onto the roof. And she gives you a hand and helps you up.
Alexi, upon getting on top of the roof, kind of just like takes a deep breath, because I'm sure the air in that long-ass corridor was stanky and stale. No circulation. That's air's...
Absolutely.
Has been there since your great-grandma, fucking Josephine, was on the earth.
And that air was still there. Like steam and dust.
And just, like, takes a big breath and, you know, stretches and then looks out at the skyline and is just like, wow.
The first thing you see is that the sunset is a different color than it was inside the observation deck. It's not the warm tone oranges, but a blazing pink. There are streaking lines of Aerodyne hover cars that cruise in neatly ordered lines over the city, all of which must have been, like, digitally filtered out of the screens inside, because you did not see those a minute ago. There are hulking aerozeps with roving spotlights and billboard advertisements kind of meandering their way between the skyscrapers and these, like, mile-high holographic billboards scroll up into the heavens advertising the latest products, services, cyberware, Braindance Virtue Series, vacation destinations, concerts, everything else that they can scream out to the heavens and hope that someone will buy. There are police lights and trauma team sirens screaming through the night, and the distant roar of traffic just kind of echoes off all the walls of the concrete canyons, and the unsanitized horizon is a lot noisier and a lot less serene than the illusion downstairs.
Alexi kind of, you know, takes in the scene and says, part of me likes it better like this, not the clean, sterile corpo world that these people like to separate themselves from reality, but seeing all the people down there going about their lives, doing their jobs, something about just the progression of life is much more beautiful than any artificial serene city line.
I like that. Yeah, I like to see what's really there. I think I'll always take the unpleasant reality of what's actually happening than any filtered lens. Real life might be ugly, but it's better to know the ugliness than to hide from it, you know?
Yes.
So in that light, I feel like I owe you an explanation. First of all, welcome to the roof. This is my quiet place, I guess you could say. Nobody really comes up here, so this has been where I come to think, and when I need to breathe, above it all, you know? I feel like it's just me and... I was gonna say me and the city, so, not really alone, I'm just high enough up that everybody seems like one thing. When you're on the street, all the bickering factions and gangs and companies and the world's tearing itself apart. But from up here, I don't know. Maybe I'm just pontificating, but
it's nice to be outside of the mess.
Yeah. From up here, it seems like they all add up to Night City. And Night City feels like it has its own opinions. They all kind of add up to one puzzle, you know?
Yeah.
So, I owe you an explanation about Miyazono in the spirit of seeing things through unfiltered eyes. Trigger warning ahead of time. I'm gonna talk about sexual assault, so if that's a no-go, if that's something you don't want to hear about,
that's fine by me.
Okay, just want to give you that out of character. Same goes for the audience. If that is a topic that you don't want to hear about, skip ahead maybe 10 minutes. So, professional discretion. I can't go spilling everything to everyone I meet, but I need you to trust me. So, you know Danger Girls, a private investigation firm? Most of our work is for, like, big-name Hollywood clients, mostly gathering evidence of infidelity and divorce proceedings, tracking down stolen goods, solving high-profile murders, that kind of thing. Miko's always been a pretty public face in high society, and most of her clients can afford to pay exorbitant rates, so more than enough to cover our operating expenses, and then some. But there's always been a little more to the business than just that. As she's already told you, Miko's been working for the feds in Washington to uncover and dismantle Arasaka assets. But that's not even the real thing I need to talk about here, because that's not the only thing Danger Girl's been doing in the shadows. Our revenue streams from Militech and our high-profile celebrity clients are profitable enough to allow us to do a lot of, let's say, pro bono work. We're in the business of delivering justice, and lots of people in the city don't have the clout or money to see justice done. So, every now and then, Michiko and I meet up with assault victims and their families and mete out justice at the end of a knife. In these little hunts, we've probably put down, I'd say, around 24 rapists, pedophiles, and sexual abusers. I think in Michiko's eyes, it's something between charity work and a hobby. She gets her rocks off taking justice into her own hands. For me, and at this she like unconsciously extends her claws a little bit. For me, it's an excuse to sink my claws into the men of this city who really deserve it. Kenji Miyazono, the young man you patched up the night we meet, he was one who deserved it. What are you doing so far as she's telling you this story?
Lexi is just, you know, just fully giving Segment their attention, you know, just listening to everything that it is that she has to say. You know, just like listening in a way that they're not responding much as she's saying these things to them, but she can tell that they are listening intently, and of course, you know, they'll chime in if there any natural pauses occur.
Yeah, feel free to chime in at any point. Interrupt me as much as you need. So last month, a girl named Trisha Thomas died at a warehouse rave in Watson. Her body was discovered the next morning and brought to the municipal morgue. NPCD had found her body in an empty concrete room in the warehouse, face down in a puddle of her own vomit. Cause of death was asphyxiation. She had been assaulted and left unconscious in an empty room where she choked to death in her sleep. Coroner detected traces of a paralytic narcotic in her bloodstream and semen in her rectum. Genetic sampling came back a positive match for Kenji Miyazono, a known member of the Tiger Claws gang, whose DNA had already been in the database from a previous offense. But when he was brought in for questioning, Miyazono claimed to have been Trisha's input, said they'd been dating for a little while, slept together the night before the concert, and that he had not seen her for most of the night.
But this clearly was not the truth.
Yeah, fuck no. Dating my ass. Our AI did a full sweep on both Miyazono and Thomas. The two had never met before that night. We compiled video footage from unsecured agent data the night of the party, and we got eyes on Miyazono spiking her drink at the bar, taking her into a private room less than an hour before the coroner's reported time of death, and then footage of him returning alone. The Tomcat drugged her, assaulted her, and then left her to die. That last part might have been an accident, but the rest of that night sure as sin wasn't.
God, that's awful.
Yeah. Several of Kenji's chums covered for him, vouching for his whereabouts during the night, and doubling down on his lie that he and Trisha had been mainlines. His father, Haruki Miyazono, is one of the crime bosses of the Tiger Claws and a regular donor to the Watson precinct, so Captain Miraz of the NCPD ordered the case be dismissed due to insufficient evidence. Despite, you know, all of the evidence.
Ah, yes. The wonderful, wonderful justice system of this country.
Gotta love it. Badges ruled it an accidental death, and Miyazono was cleared on all charges. Despite the coroner's report, NCPD toxicologists stated the chemical substance found in her bloodstream had been a designer drug she must have taken at the rave. Trisha's mother, Martha, tried to press charges, but Night City DA refused to prosecute without the police chief's go-ahead, and he was on the Tiger Claw's payroll, so nothing came of it. And that's when Michiko and I stepped in. Our in-house data analysis program is always passively scanning the data pool looking for this kind of suspicious activity. It flagged the video evidence and police reports for us, and once we had a clear picture of what really happened that night, we reached out to Mrs. Thomas. Trisha's mother wanted justice for her daughter's murder and knew damned well she wasn't going to get it through official channels.
So she went to you.
When we offered to flatline Miyazono ourselves, yeah, she agreed without a second's pause. She even offered to pull the trigger on the Malacca herself.
I see. Lexi is kinda, I don't want to say like perturbed per se, but like bothered at the fact. Like they've never really, whenever they're helping people in their medicine and stuff, you know, they kind of don't really think about, you know, who, like all their focus and all of their, you know, mental bandwidth is on making sure, doing whatever they can to make sure this person, you know, makes it through it. And so having this, you know, the fact that had Segment not showed up and things not gone the way they did, then they would have, you know, just like helped this awful drugging sexual assaulter and just like patch them up so they can go out and do that to more people. As Alexi kind of like moderately fucked up right now, they're kind of just like,
yeah, tell me about that. Tell me your feeling there. You just discovered that somebody whose life you saved.
Alexi has this.
Yeah, how are you feeling?
Alexi has this. Alexi feels responsible, feels guilty. Because, you know, they've got this whole Hippocratic Oath of, you know, helping everybody they can, you know, never doing harm to people. And they've kind of not really thought about their, I don't want to say morals per se, I want to say they haven't thought about their morals, but the way they view things with the Hippocratic Oath is very, it's like rose-tinted glasses, you know? They're doing good, they're helping people, and now they're having this realization that it's like this mindset of these bad things that will happen after they help some of these people that may or may not be bad are only still happening because they helped them, and they feel at fault somewhat. And they just look up at Sekhmet and say, and had you not found him, I would have sent him out into the streets to commit more of these awful crimes, simply because I did not care about his background or who he was or where he was from. I just cared that I wanted to help this person.
I mean, yeah, but you couldn't have known better. To you, he was just some kid off the street and you tried to help them. I don't hold that against you. For what it's worth.
Well, 'cause it kind of just like lets out a sigh and it's just like, fuck. Well, I'm glad that you told me this, and just know that from this point out, you have my full trust. I just thank you, Sekhmet, for sharing this with me, for trusting me enough to tell me this, you know, business confidentiality, as you said. You cannot just flap our jaws to anybody. And from here on out, you will have my utmost trust. And if there is ever any person that you say should not be walking, I will make sure they can no longer walk.
From a doctor, I know that means a lot. I don't trust super easy.
I got that impression. But
shut up. Thank you for being someone I can.
Of course.
I can trust. That more than anything else means a lot. I have Michiko. I don't know if you could tell, but homegirl might be married, but that does not mean she fucks Mark very regularly. So I have a lover, but I don't have a lot of friends. So yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate you. And she gives you a like firm platonic slug on the shoulder.
Alexi kind of just like looks at her. This look that says, "Give me a hug."
And she indulges you. She gives you a firm bear hug, lifts you up off the ground a little bit. She is cracks. A bear. I would say muscular, but she's made of metal. She is an incredibly strong human being, and she lifts you off the ground with ease, and plops you back down. Says, "Thank you."
"You're welcome."
All right, let's get back downside before anyone notices we're up here.
Yes.
With that, the blazing pink sunset of Night City fades out over the rim of glass, a the Pacific Ocean. As the sunset looks a lot more beautiful through clear sky than you can remember in a long time. Alexei Kravchenko is played by Finley Stevens. Fux Jumong is played by Zaphod B. Alexandria Willits is your game master. Cyberpunk is a universe created by Mike Pondsmith, and Cyberpunk Red is the creation of R. Telsorian Games Incorporated. Night City Blues is produced and edited by Alexandria Willits, music by Zaphod B. and White Bat Audio, concept art by Ash Meadow and Crow Bones, additional editing and sound design by Finley Stevens. And our theme song is Digital Sunset by Carl Casey. You can check out his other incredible music at whitebataudio.com. See you next time in Night City.
Nice.
We love bonding and character development.
Oh, yeah.
Alexei's realizing, maybe everybody does not deserve to be saved.
I think that Jumon's a solid back at zero, having learned nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
In one ear, out the other.
He's like, I want to be a hornet.